Let me say at the outset, I have no idea how this is going to turn out. As you know, Janice and I and Scott and Sarah made a trip to Israel recently. And if any one of us, other than myself, were to make this slide presentation, we'd probably pick out a lot of different things. Between the two pairs of us, there were over 3,500 pictures. So we won't see but about 1,000 tonight. I'm going to move as quickly as I can, and I may have to move through the last 20 or so really fast. I don't know. We'll just see how it goes. This is the area that we went to. We came in Tel Aviv. And we came across, let's see if I can get this pointer thing. We came in here. We went across. By the way, we didn't even get the rest. She met us at the airport with a sack lunch and said, we're gone. And so we were gone. And we crossed over the Jordan right here and came down to the east side of the Dead Sea and spent the first night right here. And we're over into Jordan and into the country of Jordan. Then we came down here all the way down to the extreme southern tip on the Red Sea the next night, spent the night there, and then we went from there all the way back up to the very tip, the north up here. From here we could look over and see Egypt at night and Saudi Arabia, the lights of it, and then from here we could look over and see Lebanon and Syria. So we went from as extremely far to the south to extremely far to the north as you could possibly go. And we saw lots of stuff in between, and after about 5 days, we all knew that we had seen certain things, we just didn't remember when and where they were located. And we tried to discuss some of those things. I just threw this slide in, and I don't have time to talk about it, but this, I thought, was really interesting to me because this tells from this direction over to this direction the history of that country and who has ruled over that country since the time of Christ, the Romans, Byzantines, Islamic, and then the, quote, Christian crusaders came along and tried to Christianize it. Then the Mamluk, the Ottoman, the British for a short period of time, and then about 1948, Israel established their state there, and they're still fighting for land, as you well know. I also threw this slide in because I want to tell you, give you a little bit. Israel today goes from right here, this area right here, up to right here. This area right here is called the West Bank. This area right here is the Gaza Strip. In between is Israel, and they're, of course, surrounded by neighbors that there's lots of fighting going on. There's lots of pushing for land that goes on in that part of the world and has for a long time. This is the Jordan River, pretty close to where we crossed. It's a muddy stream. Down close on the south part. This is an area that people generally think that where Jesus was baptized, somewhere in this area. It looks a little better on the north where it comes out of the Sea of Galilee. And you'll notice that there's somebody on your right side that's being baptized, and that's pretty common, and they'd rather be baptized up there than they had down in the muddy stream down there. And then after we crossed the Jordan River into Jordan, first place that we went to was Mount Nebo. And you'll remember Mount Nebo because that was where God took Moses and let him look over into the Promised Land. And so right here in this area is where Moses looked across Jordan, saw the Promised Land. On a clear day, you can see into the West Bank, the city of Jericho, and you can also, on a very clear day, see Jerusalem from there. So it's just across the Jordan from there. Here's a little, I don't know what you call it, but you can see the directions that the cities are from that location right there. And if we had time, we'd stop and talk about all those cities. And then that evening, we went to the Dead Sea, and we had to stay in a little second-class place there that was located, but we managed. And we took the obligatory dip into the Red Sea, and you can't drown in the Red Sea because you can't get underwater. The salinity is 8.6 times more salty than the ocean is. You notice there's no boats on it. We didn't see any the whole time that we were there. One reason is because boats float. They can float there, obviously, but they float so high that even a small wave is in danger of flipping the boat over, and so you don't see very many people who boat there. This is the lowest place on the face of the earth, 1,400 feet below sea level. Then, as we left and traveled south, we went through Moab, what used to be Moab. This is the Moab Mountains, and you think that Naomi must have been in pretty desperate shape if she wanted to come over here because there was a drought in Israel. In Genesis chapter 19, Lot's oldest daughter had a child by incest, and his name was Moab. Ruth chapter 1, verse 4, Ruth was a Moabitess. There are two highways that run, ancient highways that run through Jordan, which would be on the east side of the Dead Sea and the Jordan. One of them was the King's Highway, which ran pretty close to the Sea of Galilee, and the other one was called the Wilderness Way. And the Wilderness Way was the way that the children of Israel had to travel, which would have been further out in the edge of the desert, whenever both Edom and Moab refused to allow the Israelites to travel through that country when they were coming out of Egypt, you remember. And so they had to go the Wilderness Way, and the Bible says, the King James Version says, that their hearts were much discouraged because of the way. And so you see some of that terrain, and you wonder, how in the world can people even navigate through terrain like this? En route to our next place, which was Petra, I've called it Petra my whole life. By the way, one of the things that I found out on this trip is I don't pronounce any word in the Bible correctly, all right? I mean, it took me 4 days to realize that when somebody was saying Shabbat, that they were saying Sabbath. So I didn't even know what they were saying. but we stopped in this little town for a pit stop, and while we were outside, we met the minister of health and had our picture taken with him here. And our next stop is one of my bucket list places in the world, Petra. I've wanted to see this for a long, long time, and I'll have to move through it pretty quickly. Petra was established possibly as early as 312 B.C. as the capital city of the Nabataeans, who were the early Arabs, and it was the center of their caravan trade. It's enclosed by red rocks. It is watered by a perennial stream from nearby what today is a city in the valley of Wadi Musa, which means the valley of Moses, where Moses supposedly, the location of where he struck the rock and brought forth water. And there is a stream that still supplies water to that part of the world, to Petra. It not only possessed the advantages of a fortress, but it controlled the main commercial routes both north, east and west. And so it was a really rich place. There were a large number of people who lived here in this fortress. The Old Testament mentions this place by the Hebrew word Selah, which means rock. And what would be the Greek word that means rock? Petra, or Peter, upon this rock. And so this is this crack in the earth here is called a seek, and you walk up this seek a long ways, and you come to that first building that you saw engraved into the side of that red mountain there, and then 800 steps later, come to this church. Now, it's not just a matter of 800 steps. You go up 50 or 60 steps, and then you walk a long ways, and then you have some more steps, and you walk along. I don't know how many miles it was going through there, but every step that I took, I got discouraged because I thought, okay, I'm going to have to come back the same way. And it's a long way coming back. But it would have been mostly downhill, but we took a little different route coming out. We decided that we would ride out the back way. And so we caught the local taxis here and rode for a few miles coming out the back. And then I put this map up, and I put it a lot for Elton's sake, because Elton has taught us that he believes, at least, and there is some evidence to believe, that rather than the traditional Mount Sinai location down here in what we call the Sinai Peninsula, that he believes that this over here was Mount Sinai, and that this was the area that they crossed right here on the Gulf of Aqaba instead of the Gulf of Suez. They obviously had to come across the Gulf of Suez to get over here, but there's an area called the Sea of Reeds on the north part up here that they very possibly could have crossed. And then if they did come across over here, then Mount Sinai is either here or it's here, one of the two. But I put that up so that you could see this Eilat. That's the next place that we visited. It's today spelled E-I-L-A-T. And, you know, again, I don't assume that I know how to pronounce anything. It's located in the Timna Valley, which is approximately 19 miles north of the Gulf of Aqaba. It is where Solomon built ships. It says in 1 Kings 9:26 at Ezion Geber, which is near Eilath in Edom on the shore of the Red Sea. And it is an area that is rich in copper ore. I jumped too quick. And has been mined since the 5th millennium B.C. And this is where it's believed that Solomon's mines were, and Solomon got copper from there and so forth. And then we got to the Red Sea, and I really wanted to put more pictures up because one of the shocks to me was how beautiful the Red Sea was. I didn't expect it to be as beautiful as it is. It actually has an extremely large live reef on it. We didn't get time to go snorkeling out there over that live reef, but it would have been really nice, really beautiful, clear water. And I'm behind myself. In this valley of Eilat, there is a life-size tabernacle, and there's a lady there who gives you an extremely informative tour of the tabernacle and can answer about any question you ever wanted to have about the tabernacle there. And then we went to the Sea of Galilee. Of course, that's a long, when I say it's a long ways, the whole country is not much larger than New Jersey, to give you a picture of how far it is. But anyway, we traveled to the extreme north to the shores of the Sea of Galilee. And there's the Sea of Galilee. We're on the north shore right here. We're in the area. And the wind was blowing, and I'm reminded of how often the water got whipped up into a frenzy, and Jesus walked on the water there, and coming through the Lebanon, anti-Lebanon mountain range, the valley there, then the wind quickly comes onto that water, and you can get in trouble very quickly. There were lots of boats and activity there on the Sea of Galilee. And then on the shores of the Sea of Galilee is the town or the city of Capernaum. Capernaum was a fishing village there on the north shore. This is where, when Jesus was rejected at Nazareth, he moved there at about age 30 and made his home there. And that's where he will make come and go from there in Matthew chapter 4, verse 13. Peter lived there. And so some people have conjecture that Jesus might have lived at Peter's house. I can't take the time to tell you all of why they speculate that they know that a place like this is Peter's house. A lot of it, just real quickly, has to do with the fact that in the second and third century, whenever things started really being recorded historically, then travelers would come to go through that part of the world, and there would be something at certain locations where people said, this is where this happened. And so you come up, you can go back at least that far in most of these, at least to the third century, which would have put it in the 200s, where people said, this is where this happened, and this is where this happened, this is where this happened. Now, we can't prove it in most of these places. We can know that these things happened within sight of where you were often. But as far as going there and saying, this is the spot where Jesus' manger was, or this is the spot where this was, then we can't know that with certainty. But there is some reason to believe that this was the remains of where Peter lived. It was on the shore. He made his living fishing. The visible ruins that are there were built, the latter ones were built in the 4th or 5th century. But when you go to the darker stones on the bottom, and with the lights on, you can't quite tell as much, but the bottom couple layers there, then that goes back to the 1st century. They date that back to the 1st century, and then things were built on that. And you see that this is called the White Tabernacle. Jesus went to a tabernacle there in Nazareth, and the scroll was handed to him, and he read. And so, you know, they conjecture that that was the place where he was. If not, then it was somewhere really close by. Mark chapter 1, verse 21, when the Sabbath came, Jesus went into the synagogue and began to teach. And I took lots of pictures of flowers and stuff, and I didn't include many of them because I like flowers and trees and so forth. But occasionally I threw one in. And then we went all the way to the extreme north to the Golan Heights, and we viewed that from Mount Hermon. The Golan Heights is an area that has been captured from Syria. It is occupied by Israel, and they captured in the Six-Day War in 1967. The region that is controlled of the Golan Heights, that is controlled by Israel, includes the western two-thirds of the actual Golan Heights, as well as a part of Mount Hermon. And it is on Mount Hermon that we looked across into the Golan Heights. There are lots of things in that picture I wish I had time to tell you about, but you can see why the Golan Heights is such a desirable area. For one thing, because there are lots and lots of crops. It's a really rich area, and cropland is a premium there. What history calls the Great Rift Valley begins up in Syria, Lebanon border, comes down through there, so you're on the north end of it. It goes down through the Sea of Galilee, the Dead Sea. It goes across the Red Sea into Africa. It splits and goes into Tanzania, and so that valley is a very rich, fertile valley all the way down through that entire part of the world there. And then we went to Peneus, was the biblical name for it, and it's also called Caesarea Philippi. And you'll remember that Caesarea Philippi was the place in Matthew chapter 16, verse 13, where they came to the coast of Caesarea Philippi, and Jesus asked his disciples, saying, who do men say that I am? Well, they were approaching the city that is built here. And it was built around a cave that water, up until fairly recently, used to flow out of that cave there. And that cave is believed, and the name Peneus comes from the god Pan. And the people believed that the gods went into that cave during the wintertime, and they wintered in that cave. And then they would come out. Caesarea Philippi was an extremely licentious place, very, very immoral place, because they worshiped the god Pan, who's the goat god, half man, half goat. They worshiped him in very licentious ways. And so it's kind of interesting, and by the way, that cave there, and Elton had has shared this with us before, is considered, because they believe the gods went down in there and wintered there, they believe it's the gates of Hades, or the underworld. And so Jesus will say, in what he said to Peter, you're Peter, upon this rock I'll build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it, this kingdom that I'm going to build. And so it's centered around that cave. Unfortunately, we didn't get to go there. We got that we were running and moving as fast as we could, and we got there about 5 minutes late, and they'd locked the gate, so we couldn't go into the cave. Then we went to Mount Carmel. I took a picture of it as we were approaching it. You see it on the top of that mountain there. Mount Carmel means God's vineyard. It's a coastal mountain range, northern Israel, stretching from the Mediterranean Sea toward the southeast. And there are a number of towns that are located in the Carmel Range. One of them on the coast is Haifa. Haifa is an extremely large city. It's the third largest city that is located on the northern slope on the coast. Mount Carmel is considered a sacred place by, and I didn't put any pictures of Haifa, but the Baha'i religion has built this incredibly beautiful site there, a sacred place for them around, and they have still currently today have their administrative headquarters there in Haifa. This Mount Carmel is where Elijah challenged the 450 Baal prophets, you remember? And as I was on top of that mountain, I was thinking, okay, it was a drought while this was all going on, and they carried up these big buckets of water from somewhere, and it's a long ways up that hill. And in fact, I was impressed everywhere I went that these people had to be tough, because there's not very many flat places over there. There's lots of up. There's a lot more uphill in life than there is downhill. Y'all know that, right? And then we went to Megiddo. I've always called it Megiddo, but Megiddo, and there is a city, or there was a city. A tell means the place where a city used to be. It's a mound. And there was a city named Megiddo, and there is a valley named Megiddo. It's in the Carmel Range. This particular city is really, really, really old. They have excavated 26 different layers of ruins of different civilizations that have been built here on this site. It overlooks the Valley of Jezreel from the west. The southern part of the Valley of Jezreel here is known as the Valley of Megiddo. And it will come later in history to have another name. Anybody know what it is? Armageddon, where the great wars were fought. There were numbers of wars that were fought in the Old Testament there in that valley that you're looking at. And it comes to stand in the book of Revelation of the ultimate fight between good and evil that takes place, because so many crucial battles have taken place there. During the conquest of the country, when Israel was taking the land, Manasseh and Ephraim came to Joshua and they complained that the inhabitants of this area wouldn't leave, that they wanted to stay there. They were determined to live in that region, it says in Joshua 17, and said, and we can't drive them out because they have chariots of iron. And so the people were very, very advanced in this area right here. This is where Gideon and his 300 met the Midianites in Judges chapter 6 and 7. And then we went to Nazareth. This is, of course, the hometown of Mary and Joseph, where Jesus spent approximately 30 years of his life. In the time of Jesus, Nazareth was about 200 people. It was just a farming village. Today, Nazareth is home to more than 60,000 Israeli Arabs and thousands more of Jews who live in the northern part of the city there. This is the Church of the Annunciation, the largest church building in the Middle East. It's Roman Catholic. It was built over the place where it's believed that the angel Gabriel announced the birth of Mary, the birth of Jesus to Mary, that she was going to have a child, and so they built that over the site. One of the things that we all talked about was the fact that you go to a site where something happened, and there's these always these big temples and churches and so forth, and you get aggravated because you think, man, I can't hardly envision what it was like before this was here. But what was explained to us was if some religious group had not bought that site and built that, and by the way, these are generally not built for worship centers. They're just sites to commemorate a place. And if they had not built it, then houses would have just been built over it and the sites would not have been preserved. So it's kind of a good thing, bad thing. This is, if anybody likes olives, and I like olives, so I just took a picture of this olive merchant here. This is a tabernacle there. It dates, if not to the first century, very close to the first century. And so very possibly at this place or at some place similar to that, Jesus as a boy came every Sabbath day to a place very similar to that. We went to a replica of a first century Nazareth village, and this guy, of course, is threshing wheat. This is a replica of a tomb that would have been characteristic of the first century, and you notice the channel that the round rock is in and is chalked right there, but they would roll a rock over that tomb, and inside that tomb there would be any number of insets for people to be buried in a single tomb. This would be the wheel that they grind the wheat with. And this is not a good picture, but I really like it because it's an olive press. It's an old, old olive press, or at least a replica of what they used to do. And if you wanted the first pressings of the olive oil, then you hooked up just that one on your, is your left? Yeah, your left. And so then you press the olives with that one, and you got your extra virgin olive oil from that pressing. And then you added another one, and you got the most olive oil out of it, which would have been still usable for eating and so forth. And then you added that third stone, and it would completely press everything out, and that would be for burning your lamps and so forth. But anyway, it was interesting to me. There's a carpenter shop, and the... Anybody know what that guy's doing there? Can you tell it well enough to know what he's doing? It might, but that's a drill. Yeah, that's a drill. And this lady is spinning wool into yarn, and she's blocking what she's weaving behind, but she's weaving something, a rug or something behind her. And she told the ladies, she said, let me tell you a little secret. She said, I'm 200 years old, and it's olive oil that does this for my skin. And this is whenever Jesus went to the tabernacle, and he opened the scroll, and he read from Isaiah, and he said, today this is coming about in your hearing. And they marveled at his words, and then he told them a couple of stories about how God had worked with people other than the Jews. Remember, there was a large number of widows in Israel at that time, but he chose one outside, and there were a large number of people who had leprosy in Israel, but he chose to heal somebody outside, talking about Naaman, and they got angry, and they took him to a hill, and they were going to throw him off. Well, evidently, this is it. And it's really interesting when you get up there, and a lot of times there's a plaque up there, and if it is a Jewish plaque, then it will, when it talks about a miracle that took place, it will be somewhat skeptical in its writing about it. And I noticed on the plaque that was there that it said Jesus jumped off of that cliff. Rather than the Bible says he passed through their midst, said he jumped off of that cliff there. And evidently they're thinking he just escaped by jumping a little ways down and then escaped from them there. But you could, if you go to that edge and look over, you could see how that would be a pretty serious place to be thrown off of because it's almost straight down. I got as close to the edge as I like to get right there, right? And then the church at Nazareth, this is the only church of Christ that is left in the Middle East, right here. We have had the preacher and his family, there they are, along with us, visit us fairly recently, and hopefully they'll be back before too long, the Jadens. And they had a really good preacher that day. It happened to be, of all times, this has to be one of the highlights of my life to get to preach in Nazareth. I mean, this is where Jesus grew up, and it was Pentecost. And so that just kind of now, you know, as Christians, that didn't mean any more to them than it does to us. But nevertheless, for that area, that was a really special time. They had fellowship afterward, had some really nice snacks and so forth. Now, for the life of me, and I meant to catch Scott and Sarah and let them tell me what the name of this stuff was, I looked it up before I went over there, and this is the one thing I wanted to eat over there. I'd read about this. It has goat cheese in it, and that doesn't sound too good to you, or maybe to me, but don't be fooled. That's really, really good. It's a dessert. It's not as sweet as it looks, but it's really, really good dessert. It takes a long time to make, I really enjoyed that. I had told them I wanted some of that when I went over there. And I can't remember the name of it. I've tried to think for the last two or three days. This is, in the distance, that mound is the mount, believed to be the Mount of Transfiguration. And then we came to Masada. And some of you know about Masada. I'll have to just pinch myself to make myself not tell you too much about Masada. But Masada was built by Herod the Great as a palace. And it's an incredible, incredible structure. It rises about 1,300 feet from the floor, and you can see the Dead Sea from here. And so it's in a really desolate part of that country. And it was built by Herod the Great. The first level, the flat top area up there is, and I didn't know this, I had to read it, rhomboid shaped, and it's 1,800 feet by 900 feet. He built it in 37, somewhere between 37 and 31 before Christ. And so it wasn't, hadn't been there too long when Jesus lived there. Some 75 years after Herod's death, at the beginning of the revolt by the Jews, they overran it and took it. And then whenever Jerusalem fell in AD 70, a large number of Jewish zealots named Sicarii went out and joined those that were already there, and they held out Rome. They would come down from there and harass the Romans. And the Romans didn't put up with anything, and they didn't want to leave anybody unconquered. And so they brought a large number of Roman soldiers and built a wall around that place so none of them could get out. And it took them a number of months. But they brought thousands of Jewish captives with them. And you're looking off the face of it right there, looking down that three tiers. The first top, I should go back, this first level up here, as you see, is his palace. The second one is a library. And the third one was a bathhouse where he received guests, and they had hot and cold running water there. It was incredible, incredible. Herod was an incredible builder. And this is the ramp they built, used the Jewish slave labor to build a ramp up one side, an earthen ramp up one side of this so that they could get over into where these zealots were. And today we would call those Jewish terrorists. But when they got there and the Jews realized that they were going, those defenders, realized that they were going to actually, the Romans were going to take them, then they made a pact of suicide. And so whenever the Romans breached the wall and got up there, everybody was dead. Except, I think, two women and maybe one or two children. And that's where they got the story from, of how they committed suicide rather than allowing themselves to be captured by the Romans. Then we went to Mount Gilboa, and Mount Gilboa is where Saul and Jonathan were killed. That's where that war took place. And Let me go back. You see that city? Not that city right there, but that city right there. That's where they took Saul and his sons, including Jonathan, their bodies, and the Philistines did, and hung their bodies on the wall. And some of David's great men went later at night and made their way in and retrieved those bodies from the wall there. And so there was an interesting something on the ground there. You see that figure? We don't know what it is. But it was obviously, it's intentional, and it very probably has something to do with Saul and Jonathan being killed. And it's you see, it's the figure of a man who's holding, both hands are holding something. So we're not quite sure, and we didn't find out, and it looks like they would have explained that somewhere up there, but they didn't. So that city was called Beth-Shean, and you read about it in 1 Samuel 31. And then just real quickly to Tel Aviv, a beautiful, beautiful city, very modern. That was our salad before the meal came. I think I counted 21 different dishes of stuff that they brought out, none of which I was particularly fond of. But nevertheless, Caesarea Maritime. There was Caesarea Philippi, and then there's Caesarea Maritime. It's built on the coast of the Mediterranean. It was built by, again, by Herod the Great. And one of the things about him, he might not have been much in the way of having character, but he was an incredible builder. And he built this about somewhere between 25 and 13 B.C. And so this was a new city in the time of Christ. It was named in honor of Caesar Augustus. It became the Roman capital of the Judean province and the official residence of the Roman procurators and governors, Pontius Pilate, Felix, Festus. This is where they went. It's an incredibly big, large, they have an amphitheater there that seats, was it 7,000 or 10,000? I can't remember. It seemed like 10,000 because 7,000 was at Petra. And they had gladiatorial games. And after the Jews were, and Jerusalem fell, then Titus brought Jewish captives there, and they had gladiatorial games there, and over 2,500 Jews were killed there on this site. But it's an incredibly, incredibly beautiful site. He not only built the city there, but he built a harbor. And I wish I had time because it's really, really fascinating about how he did that, and he learned how to set concrete underwater and made this incredibly large harbor out there, the remnants of which are still there. This is where Peter baptized Cornelius. This is where Philip the evangelist lived. Paul, when he appealed to, or whenever he was imprisoned in Rome, and they made a plot to kill him, you remember? And his nephew came and told him, and they sent him to Caesarea with cavalry and armed guard. And so he was imprisoned there, and this is where he made his appeal to Caesar. And it'll be from here that he will go to Rome. Then, I can't remember the name of this place, the life of me, but it's where the bones of Stephen, the first Christian martyr, were brought. They have come and taken them from this. I don't know. This old guy was nearly old enough to have been there when they did that, but really, really nice guy, and they had some really beautiful murals around the wall. That's an olive press and an olive tree. I'll say something more about olive tree in just a minute. But this is a hydraulic press here, so this is a newer press, olive press. Here in the basket on the bottom, it lifts up, and it has a center that's open, and they fill that up with olives, and it stands up pretty tall, and they fill it up. And then they bring this press down, they bring it a certain way and get the best oil, then further and get, you know, more and more until they get all of it. There were shepherds all over the whole area. And if this is a modern day David right here, really, this is a shepherd boy that was taking care of the sheep. out in the field. He stays out there with them. And when he saw us taking pictures, here he came running, and the dust was just flying. Boy, here he came. And he stopped and started taking this little stride for us here, you know, so we could get his picture. And pretty neat-looking kid. And then there's Tel Azekah, which is also the Valley of Elah. This is where David met Goliath. And this, for some reason, this is one of my favorite places. I think maybe some of all of our favorite places in 1 Samuel chapter 17. And somewhere between this mountain that we're on, Tel Azekah, this is where the Israelites were camped, on this mountain. And that mountain over across the little valley there, that's where Goliath and his forces were. And they met somewhere between those two. So we're looking probably at the spot where they met, somewhere down in that valley. And there is a stream, as in most valleys, there's a stream that runs through that valley. And guess what happened in that stream? David crossed it, and when he crossed it, he picked up 5 smooth stones. And he didn't need but one, but I would have liked to have spent a lot more time there. I really enjoyed it. This is my idea of what a souvenir is, by the way. You know, I'm not so much into souvenir shops, but this just flipped my wig here. I like these little rocks. So we spent some time, you know, at least a few minutes. Miss Terry Freeman, everywhere we went, she said, come on, we got to go, we got to hurry, we got another place to go. And so we moved on. We went into the West Bank, which, by the way, I would really be happy not to be there today, because if you've been reading the news, there were 3 young men that were killed, and then there was one that has evidently been burned in retaliation. And so probably the West Bank is not where you would want to go. That's Israeli controlled, but Bethlehem and Jericho both are in the West Bank. And so we wanted to go to Bethlehem. You notice, and as we went into the West Bank area, Terry Freeman, who she and her husband will soon be coming back and be joining the congregation here because he's through drilling in the Gulf over there, she said, now we're going to have an Israeli driver over here, and so I'm not going to be able to talk like I would normally and tell you and point out things. She said, but I want you to notice some things. And one of the things I want you to notice, when we cross into the West Bank, there will be a building on your left that has a drawing, as some graffiti, of a bird. And I want you to look at it, and we'll talk about it when we come out. Do you notice anything interesting about that? The dove, he has an olive branch in his mouth, which is an international peace symbol, right? But he also has on a flak jacket. And I don't know if you can notice, if you can see it or not, but he's got crosshairs on him right here from a scope, right there. And that is one of their protests, because the Jews came in 1948 and retook that land. The West Bank is completely encircled by the Jews. They can't leave. And they feel like they're a bird shut up in a cage. And so they're really hostile and they're really angry. But they like tourist dollars, and so they don't automatically shoot you when you go in there. But, you know, lots of tourists want to go to Bethlehem. This is the Church of the Nativity, where supposedly the site where Jesus was born, and they've got a monument over the site where they say he was born. This was built by the Emperor Constantine in 327, so this is an old building, and you can see they're renovating it right now. This is a really, really sobering sight right here. This is the bones of children that whenever Constantine built this church, he went out to here in Bethlehem, and he got out of ossuaries, which hold bones after they've been in the grave for a year, then they put them in a stone box called an ossuary. And he gathered up the bones of children that were supposedly killed by Herod whenever Jesus was born. And those bones have been there since the 4th century. And it's a pretty sobering sight to look into there and see those bones. They have, of course, all these temples have beautiful murals over them there. This is the angels appearing to the shepherds out in the field. Just to the east of Bethlehem is Boaz, or the shepherd's field, where supposedly this is where Naomi came. This was her hometown. She came back, and her daughter-in-law came back with her, Ruth, and she gleaned wheat in this field here, and supposedly at this place right here. And then we went to Jerusalem, and I should have said it at the beginning. A number of these slides came from Scott and Sarah, and Scott put together, this is a really neat place that we went to, the Israel National Museum, and they had, I don't know how big it was, an acre, would you say, something like that, that they had a replica of the city of Jerusalem. And in order to get that, he put three slides together here, or three pictures together, and came up with more panoramic view here in Jerusalem. And I'll take a little time on this slide, and I won't take so much on the next one. This is the south end of the Temple Mount that was built by Herod. This temple, he shaved the Temple Mount off. He wanted to build a temple a lot bigger than Solomon's, and so he shaved the top of that hill off. He built this incredible, incredible wall around it. A portion of it is still exists today above ground. It's called the Wailing Wall, or the Western Wall. This right here, coming down from the Temple Mount, going down here, this is the old city of David right here outside the Temple Mount area. And so, anyway, this used to be, this between the Temple Mount and the old city of David used to be about 60 feet deeper. It's been filled in over the years. And they had to make a trek down and a trek up several times a day to go to the temple. This area right here is the Mount of Olives. On the other side of it is Bethany, where Lazarus and Mary and Martha lived, where Jesus, coming from Bethany, came across the Mount of Olives. He came down through the Kidron Valley. He came to the Eastern Wall, which would be around the other side over here. And there are the Golden Gates there that the Jews believe that the Messiah is going to come one day. And since they believe that, and since the Temple Mount area is under control of the Muslims, the Muslims walled those gates up so the Messiah can't get in there. And they also put a graveyard, this huge, huge graveyard in front of it, so that the road has been blocked to go there. And that's just a little bit of an indication of some of the hostility that still exists there. This is coming down from the Mount of Olives, looking across into the city of Jerusalem. And I took this picture. I've always noticed that when you try to take a picture and show somebody how steep...